Are you looking for new books to read? Do you like finding a new special author? Are you tired of the same old books from the same old authors? Well then, welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where you can hear from fantastic new authors. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have worked hard to write great new books. Hear about their book and why you should check it out. So sit back and listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Hey, all, and good morning. I want to welcome you to a great new episode of Discovered Wordsmith. Got Michael Potts with me today. He is actually a professor and has a PhD, so he's probably one of my most prestigious guests that I've had on here. He's published some interesting things, including some horror poetry. So it's a great listen. We had a great chat about this. And I'm sitting here. It's the first really big snowy day of 2022 for me. Enjoying the snow and have a good podcast to listen to. So sit back and enjoy. And words of wisdom for any of the writers out there. If you've come up with 27 new story ideas today, but you haven't finished the other 362, you might be a writer. So here's Michael. First of all, tell me the names of your books. I don't think I had that in any of the emails.
Okay.
We haven't really started the interview. This is just talking a little bit, so I know, and then we'll get started.
My first book was a poetry book that won the Mary Bell Campbell Award from the North Carolina Writers Network, and it was From Field to Thicket. And that was published in 2006. It was really a nice edition. I don't have many of these left. I reprinted it with my own edition and published it myself later on when I ran out of most of these. But it's mainstream poetry. And then my next book was in 2011. This was End of Summer. It's a Southern fiction book published by Wordcraft Press in Tullahoma, Tennessee. And Unpardonable Sin was 2014, I believe. Yeah, from Wordcraft Press. That is a horror novel, Lovecraftian horror. And Obedience,
cool.
Nice cover here, is going to be made into a movie. Hopefully, we can get the funding by Rule 14 Pictures, which is associated with my publisher, Wordcrafts.
Oh, cool.
And it's also a horror novel. Then I self-published Hiding from the Reaper and other horror poems. So that was my first collection of horror poetry. It's hard to publish horror poetry. I would say a lot of even well-known writers in horror poetry have to self-publish on that. And then my latest to this year, I have The Death Rattle and Other Dark Tales, and I worked draft to digital on that one, and that means it's an ebook only. I sent you a copy, which you should receive.
Okay. And yeah, I'll have to go look through the emails, but yeah.
But that's fine. And that was my first anthology of short stories I ever published. And the nice thing about draft to digital, they let you name a press. Any press, you can give it any name you want. So I just called mine Heart's Blood Press to make it sound creepy. And then I also published another collection of dark poetry, not really horror poetry, but mainstream dark poetry with a few horror poems in there. And that's called Slipknot and Other Dark Poems. And that would be my literary books. I have an academic book that I edited called Beyond Brain Death and came out in 2000. And I've got a crap load of academic publications as well as individual poems and two stories published.
Okay. So also the second half, we usually pick a topic, like an author topic, something you've run into or concern to discuss. But do you have an idea of what you'd like to discuss on that second half?
One idea I had was small press versus self-published, which is better.
That's right.
Or what are the advantages and disadvantages of each? Because a lot of authors want to know, because it's very difficult to get an agent and go to one of the big presses, and they don't do that much for you anymore anyway. They don't right. even do a lot of publicity. Okay. Yeah. Right. I think that.
Okay. Then if you're all set, we'll just get going.
All right. I'm set.
Okay. All right. Good morning, Michael. Welcome to Discovered Wordsmith Podcast. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm good. And I must say, I think you're the most dressed up guest I've had. Long distance phone calls like this, working from home and all that, people tend to wear what I'm wearing, t-shirts.
Well, that's true, but I'm dressed for school, and I guess I have a personal preference to dress up when I teach.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, about where you're from and what you like to do, what your day job is at the moment.
I'm originally from Smyrna, Tennessee, which is about 20 miles southeast of Nashville. I went through the public school system there, and went to David Lipscomb University in Nashville and received a Bachelor of Arts in Biblical Languages, Greek and Hebrew. I have an wow. equivalent of an MDiv from Harding School of Theology. It was then called Harding Graduate School of Religion in Memphis. I have an MA in Religion from Vanderbilt, and a PhD in philosophy from the University of Georgia. I taught half-time there for a year, and then taught full-time at Kennesaw State University in Marietta. And then in the fall of 1994, I got the tenure-track position at Methodist University, and my title is professor of philosophy there at Methodist in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Nice.
As far as... Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, please tell us a little bit about some of your hobbies and things you like to do.
I like to play chess. I play in tournaments a lot, about a middle-of-the-road tournament player. Not really great, but not really bad either. I enjoy vegetable gardening. I grew up in the country, and I like living in the country. For being such an intellectual, I'm really a simple soul at heart and like doing a lot of simple things. I love to read about every subject imaginable. And I like going to parks and out in the woods, museums and nice. Things like that.
Love museums. And I notice in your bookshelf back there, you've got a couple For Dummies books. I love that because all through my life, all my careers, I've had For Dummies books. I need to learn a new subject. Start with a For Dummies book.
They're actually pretty good, and you can learn a lot through them. So for fields I'm not familiar with, sometimes I'll just get one of those and try to learn the field on my own.
Right. Yep, I agree. Most of them are good. I remember getting the computer ones back in the day, where that's how they started. Right. So you're a teacher. Why did you want to start writing? And you write poetry and horror fiction mostly. So why did you want to start doing that?
I started writing seriously in 1996. I had a friend that I used to talk to, a staff member at Methodist, and she was going to take a poetry course, and he said, "Why don't you take it too?" So I signed up for it. Well, she ended up deciding, well, it's too much for my work schedule. So I kept taking it, and it was a wonderful course with my former colleague who's retired now, Robin Green, who's a very good poet in herself, and I fell in love with poetry at that time and wrote, of course, mainstream poetry then. Then in 2005, later on, after I'd gotten into poetry and had gotten the poetry accepted with my first contest that I won, I went to the two writing workshops. So one was through what is now called MTSU, which is an online program. They call it the Writer's Loft at the time. It's a two-year program. It's a certificate program, and it's not quite as hard as an MFA, but it's a lot of work. And that same year, I went, at least my first year in that program, I think it was the year I graduated from that program, I got into the Odyssey writing workshop, horror, science fiction, fantasy writing workshop up in Manchester, New Hampshire. And that is an extremely intense workshop. Learned a lot there. I would recommend anyone who is interested in writing in science fiction, fantasy, or horror to go to that workshop. Check it out. It's not that expensive for what you get. I like horror because I just always have. I watched Dark Shadows when I was a kid on TV because it scared me too much. I read a lot of horror. I loved Poe. And then, I read King in high school, and I loved his works. And later on, of course, read the classic Lovecraft and some of the other contemporary horror writers, Robert McCammon and others. And I just like to be scared, and I like to scare people.
Tell us a little bit more about the actual books. You've got an interesting, you got a horror poetry collection in there, but you've got a couple other things mixed in. You've been doing this for a little over 10 years?
Yes. Yeah, I did. Probably a little longer than that. It took me a while to write my first book. I wanted to do that one. I wrote the first draft in three weeks, pretty much. I went to Weymouth Center in North Carolina, where you could just write the whole time by yourself. And I wrote the first draft, but then it had to be refined. And I did that through the Writer's Lock program. And that was the book that a lot of writers will say every writer writes. It's a coming-of-age story. It's based partly on my own memory. My parents didn't like the fact that I killed off my parents early on in the book, the parents of the character. but I told them, look, I don't want to deal with too many characters. I want to focus on the boy and his grandfather. So that's the only reason I did that. And it's a kind of a sweet Southern fiction novel, and boy is losing his grandfather, and he's dealing with that. And can he overcome that? Can he have at least maybe some kind of experience that helps him overcome that? Very Southern, very rural. Anyone who's grown up in a rural area anywhere really can appreciate that book. It does have a few horror elements, some nightmares I used to have as a kid about my granddaddy turning into a skeleton and things like that, because I was afraid he would die, you know, when I was a kid. So that was really, it's probably my most popular novel. A lot of people like it because it reminds them of home if they grew up in an area like that. Then I got tired of my mother telling me to write another sweet novel, so I decided to go all out on the other direction and wrote Unpardonable Sin. Which is basically...
if they didn't like the parents dying in the first one, here we go. Now it's going to get worse.
It got worse. I pulled out all the stops on that one. It's definitely for adults only horror, but it's consistent with my worldview, which is basically a religious worldview. So it does come out the right way, so to speak. But it's about a Lovecraftian demon who pretends to be a demon in the Christian tradition to scare this fundamentalist boy into killing himself. And the issue is, how can he overcome that? He's being pressured so much, and the demon's basically bothering him all the time. And I gave the demon a sense of humor too, my weird sense of humor. So the demon's talking, for example, about people that are easy to tempt. And then he says, and the easiest of all, college administrators. And then, hope I don't get in trouble for that. But anyway, obedience was next.
And you kept your teaching job after that.
Yes, I did. Obedience was next. Not as far as pulling out all the stops, no, but it's unique. It's about a fundamentalist preacher. Now, his daughter's the main character because she's having to deal with her father going mad. But he goes mad because Satan decides to change his appearance to look like Jesus and tell the father, the only way you're going to save your daughter's soul is to kill her. You better do that before she sins. You know? And she's having to keep him from killing her, and their friends involved. It's a teenage, you know, kind of story like you get in some of Stephen King's novels. And I hope any fundamentalist or evangelical knows it's a fake Jesus. It's not, it's the demon. It's Satan pretending to be Jesus. So, and that's the one that's going to be made into a. And then there was a horror poetry that I mentioned before. And then mainstream, of course, I reprinted from Field of Thicket, the mainstream poetry. And these last two, I just wanted to get two more books out this year. I'm not getting any younger, so I wanted to continue to produce. And I had a lot of horror short stories. Two had been published, and one of them I couldn't find, so I couldn't use it. But it was actually probably one of the really strongest stories in the bunch. But I took Death Rattle, which had been published, and some of the other stories, which were unpublished, and put them into a volume of short stories. I'd never done that before, horror stories, all of them. And Death Rattle and Other Dark Tales. And since I had a lot of horror poetry, I'd sent the poetry book to a horror publisher, and they were going to publish it until COVID. And when COVID came along, they said, we have to focus on fiction because poetry is not going to sell that well, and financially we just can't do that right now. So I decided I might as well publish it. So Slipknot and Other Dark Poems I had published through the Draft a Digital service, and they let you name a press name. So I just said, for though that one in the previous book is published by Heart's Blood Press. And I like the title, and it sounds nice, yeah. Like a press. Yeah, sure. So I was happy about getting those out. So I do have some projects in mind.
So why did you... Okay, let me ask this first. You're in the academic world. You've written some papers and academic articles and that. Why did you want to write fiction and horror specifically?
Because I thought it might be a way to... by not... to present a particular worldview through a story without being preachy or teachy, so to speak. That is, let the story send the message. Otherwise, it's bad art. Any art that's preachy is bad art. That's the problem with a lot of evangelical fiction. There are exceptions, like Ted Dekker and Frank Peretti, later Frank Peretti. So I wanted to send basically a message of a kind of a Christian worldview, but not preachy, but through the storyline, through the plot, through the characters. Now, some may not believe that, given some of the language in Unpardonable Sin, but that is what I was trying to do. I'm not going to limit my language because there are people who speak using rather colorful metaphors, and I think if I'm going to present that character correctly, I have to present them the way they really are, would be in real life.
Agreed.
So it's not...
So you said you had... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It's not really Christian fiction in the sense that you get at a shelf at a lot of evangelical store, but in a way it is. It's more like some of the great Catholic novels that are not preachy. I just read one recently that was about vampires and where a priest was a vampire killer. It was actually very well written and was not preachy at all. So that's really what I'm trying to do.
Okay. Got it. So you mentioned you have other projects on the horizon in your mind. What are you working on next?
I'm working on a novel and a screenplay. The screenplay is about a man who is visiting his grandfather. His grandfather's in his 90s. He's already teaching in college. And he discovers some evidence that his grandfather may have been a serial killer in the past. What does he do? And I think I'm going to put a twist on it at the end too, but I'm not going to go into that yet. But I think there's going to be something that's a bit of a surprise. And the other project is a novel, and it is a mixture of Southern fiction, Southern Gothic, and a little bit of magic realism. It is about a boy whose grandfather is an elder at a church, and this evil woman stirs up people against her grandfather and kicks him out as elder. He dies of a heart attack from the stress, and he decides to get revenge. And he and a friend of his, and they're young, fairly young boys, 11 or 12, they definitely get their revenge. And then after they grow up, there might be a price to pay for that revenge too. So that's the general plot line.
Nice. And when do you expect those to be out?
I think the screenplay, maybe by the end of the summer, I'll try to shop it around because it requires quite a bit of revision now. I have a draft, but it's got to be reworked. So really to work this little surprise in, I plan on it. And the novel, I'm having to develop the character of the woman a little more. You don't want somebody evil to be totally evil. You want them to have a good side to them as well as a bad side, even though that good side may be very small, but you have to portray them sympathetically at some point. So I want to portray her journey, just shift from chapter to chapter as far as which character has the point of view. And that's what I've been working on, is filling it in. When it's finished, it will be probably my longest novel. It'll be probably around 80, 85,000 words.
Nice. Okay. And your stories that are out, what type of feedback are you getting from readers?
My friend, Catherine Caressman, who was on your podcast, I believe. Let's see. She said about Death Rattle. Let's see if I can find the quotation here. Okay. Here we go. A terrifying journey into a grotesque funhouse in which the darkness of the universe is complemented by the blackness of the human soul. Hope it's not that pessimistic, nice. But I do have stories in pessimistically, because I'm just saying, you hold this Lovecraftian worldview, this is really bad. This is despair.
Lovecraft really wasn't a let's end on a happy note type of writer.
No, he was not. And I think of Stephen King's novel Revival, classic Lovecraftian style novel, which I really love that novel, by the way.
That's so interesting, yeah. Because I didn't care for that one as much.
A lot of people didn't. I didn't like the ending, but I understood he was writing Lovecraftian fiction. And it's the old ones. They're not going to treat dead people very well. Or the living, for that matter.
I guess that, you know, just goes to show, every novel, every story, there's somebody that'll like it. That's one of the great benefits in today's world with independent publishing, is a novel that a publisher may not have picked up and put out there can get out there. And things like Lit RPG have come out and people love it, but nobody probably would have published it. So that's the message.
That's true. And that's really the advantage of having both small presses and also self-publication opportunities these days, that publishers are picky. And they don't always guess rightly either.
And we're going to talk more about publishers in the second half. Right. So you mentioned one of your books you're working on turning into a movie. Have you thought any of your books would be good as a TV show with all the new streaming TV stations we have?
As a TV show, you could probably do something like that with Obedience. You'd have to have the female lead investigating cases, sort of a teenage investigator maybe, of cases that are weird, like the Night Stalker or whatever, the 60s series. Yeah, something like that, but with teens. I mean, that probably could work. Developing a TV series is a lot of work. You have to think of numerous plot lines. I'd have to have somebody helping me if I ever did that. There are some very good horror series. I guess my favorite would be Twin Peaks. But I don't think I could ever be close to the brilliance of David Lynch.
Yeah, he's a genius, definitely. So let me ask you, Michael, what are some of your favorite books and favorite authors? You mentioned a few authors earlier on. What are some of your favorite books? Revival, you mentioned that.
My favorite fiction book is not a horror novel. It's called A Death in the Family by James Agee, who's a Southern writer from Tennessee. And it is absolutely wonderful. The beauty of the language, the characterization, the plotting, just everything about that book is perfect. I can't think of a better book, a better written fiction book. writer with a similar style, though certainly not that level, but still very good, would be Ray Bradbury. Dandelion Wine is a very fine novel. And I like his horror stories, but pretty much everything he does. That sense of nostalgia without being sentimental. He's very good at that. So he has such a beautiful language, which contrasts quite a bit with the language he used in public. But anyway.
And then where you live, do you have any favorite bookstores that you like to go visit?
I like the Barnes & Noble in Fayetteville. And that's because I just like to browse there. There's just a lot of stuff in there. And I also like the Second & Charles, which is a used bookstore. I wish that we had a Books A Million here because I can get those very nice, trying to remember the name of the publisher, Flame Tree Fiction, Flame Tree Press. They do a lot of very nice covers on classic ghost stories and classic horror stories. Hmm. Beautiful covers on the books, and along with some new stories, and they're all very good. And they look great on a bookshelf lined up next to each other, too. And they're only $10 a piece there. But unfortunately, that's a good hour and 40 minutes away. So I would say Barnes & Noble probably would be the local one that I like the best.
Got it. Okay. All right. So before we wrap up talking about your books and move on to some author discussion, tell everybody why they should buy your books to read.
The books will affect you at multiple levels. They will affect you emotionally. In the case of the horror books, I do like to put definitely a creepy sense of humor. You know, one of these senses of humor you read and you say, oh, that's funny. Oh, why am I laughing at this? Uh-oh. And and there's definitely some areas of suspense in them that should be where you don't know what to expect. And of course, it's the holding back that makes suspense work rather than just having a pop out all the time. You want to hold back and let it build. And I think the imagery can be rather horrifying as well. There, in one of my books, a kid is in an old car. All right. I was basing it on an old car that I knew as a kid that was at there's a trash pile at my grandparents. There was an old 1940s car there. So the kid goes in there and the demon appears in the form of a snake crawling on him and has
the demon of the trash heap.
Yeah, the demon of the trash heap. And for people who don't like snakes, that would be quite horrifying. And they also are designed to make you think. So they're more than just, okay, I'm going to read them. And yeah, it's a nice story. I can read, say, something by T.M. Wright. Say, yeah, this is a nice genre story. This is a nice genre book. I enjoyed that. Read it afternoon and it's done. But I want my books to have people continuing to think after they've read them. Oh, what does this mean? Is there something more to this? So that's my philosopher side there. You don't want to be teachy about it, at least through the plot and characterization. I want them to be able to think through some profound issues about reality.
Got it. All right. Well, nice. Great. Michael, thanks for sharing the books with us. We'll include links to those in the show notes. Thanks for being on Talk About Them.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe, sometime in the near future, it might be you.